Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of Talking Snooker with Phil Haig and Nick Metcalf. Once again, talking about the game we all love.
Yeah, and what a game we've just seen. We're doing one of our, feels like a while since we've done this, our sort of immediately after a final record, immediately after the Welsh Open final, and we've just seen Rob Milkins win an amazing match, amazing tournament, amazing story. And the Welsh Open, we were just saying before it came on, keep churning out these stories. The last three have been monumental affairs, I'd say.
Absolutely correct word to use, because Jordan Brown was special enough. What a guest he was last time. Thank you to Jordan. Winning the title in 2021, one of the great surprise stories. Then Joe Perry 12 months ago, Phil, how emotional was that? And as you just been saying off air, probably or arguably even more emotional tonight for Rob Milkins. I mean, I don't think there can be a snooker person out there not heartened by this. This is another story, isn't it, of a player in their autumn career-wise that has produced something very special. And this is almost takes it up a level from some of the other ones, really. When you think about some of the personal sadnesses Milkins has gone through, the tough times on the table. I mean, just a year ago, we know what happened in Turkey, of course. And I'm going to sound like I'm obsessed with Road to Damascus moments now. Actually, I am obsessed with Road to Damascus moments, in truth. I'm not saying Rob had one of those recently, but it would have been maybe a chance to reshape things in his mind. Who knows? What a year he's had since then. I mean, winning in Gibraltar. And this, frankly, didn't come from nothing at all. He's been showing good form lately. But to blitz his way to the title, I mean, just marvellous. Beating Sean Murphy 9-7 in the final. Murphy would have started as favourite, no question, for his sort of status in the game and indeed the way he was playing a lot during the week. But Milkins really took it to him, didn't he, Phil? And he was a good winner in the end. I mean, we were just saying before we came on that, you know, there was no wilting with the finishing line in sight. Quite the opposite. He surged for it, won it 9-7. And Sean was saying he wasn't quite at his sort of best standards, and he wasn't. But I still thought he played okay, frankly. And I think the story for me is giving credit to the winner. I think Milkins really played well from 3-1 down, especially this afternoon. And then the breaks he knocked in tonight, he really made important contributions when it mattered. And frankly, he was just the better player on the day and the right winner on the day.
Yeah, definitely. I think Murphy was looking the stronger early on. He certainly he won. Was he 2-0 up, 3-0 up?
3-1
up. 3-1 up, yeah. And yeah, things neither really had settled then. And yeah, they finished the afternoon session 4-4, didn't they? But yeah, I didn't think Murphy played badly. He was obviously disappointed because he couldn't play better. We'll come to this later. He showed how well he can play early in the tournament when he played as well as anyone can play, really. So he will have been disappointed. He certainly didn't mean it to take anything away from Rob by saying he didn't play his best. But yeah, he didn't play his best. and Rob was deserving. He made some great breaks, but Murphy did as well. That I think it was to go 6-7. Murphy made an amazing 64, and then a century after that. So yeah, the evening session, neither were wilting under the pressure. I didn't think the evening session was much better than the afternoon session. And the break Milkins made to win it was brilliant as well. It was the first red, wasn't it? Where he was sort of tight on the top cushion into the middle. Oh, that's so difficult. So especially under that pressure. So yeah, amazing game. Yeah, I mean, just looking at the breaks, I mean, they were both sort of talking down how well they'd played, but I think they both played pretty well, if not really well, given the circumstances with what was on the line. So yeah, spectacular stuff. And as you say, very emotional. If anyone's not read that piece I did with Rob last year after Gibraltar, he talks through all his sort of the tragedies he's gone through in his life with his family. And it's the people, his two friends there, Mandy and Dean, who he was dedicating the trophy to, have been massively influential. And it was hard not to sort of well up if you didn't know that story. But if you do know the story behind it, it was very emotional indeed. So, yeah, amazing stuff. And even Ali Carter, who, not because he's a heartless man, but because Milkins winning took that 150 grand off Carter. Even Carter was tweeting saying he means from the bottom of his heart that he's delighted for Rob and what a guy and stuff. So, yeah, it's unanimously goodwill towards the champion.
Very much so. It's tears to a glass eye, Phil, if you're a snooker fan. It really is, because it seems to be so often on these Sunday nights we have these special stories. And yeah, you're right, we are more involved than most, certainly, you know, some levels. We know some of these people involved, of course, we write about them. But, you know, frankly, all you need to be is a fan and enjoy this sport to know something about what these guys have gone through. And it's so heartening. And it just doesn't feel like what he's done this season, if you like, or the last sort of 4 or 5 years. It feels like this is sort of 30 years in the making. That's what it's about, isn't it? It's decades in the making. And, you know, I think he's 46 now, Rob, nearly 47. And this is the biggest win of his life, you know, by a mile. I mean, Gibraltar was great. You know, of course, a landmark success. But there's nothing beats this. Two-session final, home nations event. Great crowds in Llandudno. We should say that from the off. What a terrific, you know, success it was hosting the event there. I've been one of those, been very clear in saying that I think it's a really big deal taking that tournament away from South Wales. I think South Wales is a hugely significant part of the UK, and that was a big decision to do that. But listen, Llandudno deserves a tournament for as long as it wants. When it delivers a setting like that, crowds like that, and we've certainly been receiving messages throughout the week, and I've been seeing all on forums that people that have been saying they love it. And what really comes over is it's a proper sort of snooker town. And I love those venues we go to in the season where some of the places, frankly, are too big and the snooker gets eaten up. You know, maybe in our own little pocket it might be, you know, significant. But it feels like most of Llandudno, certainly sort of on the seafront there and around the venue, in the bars and the restaurants, snooker talk. And I love that sort of feeling about it. So this was just a great night, we should say, of course, as well. And I wouldn't go as far as saying outspoken. I've thrown it out there tonight that I don't think the biggest fan of the Bet Victor bonus, I'll be honest. I don't know, but maybe we'll have that debate tonight. Maybe we won't. But you have to say, I said it felt a bit golfy. But what the big difference is, to be fair, is that the golfers are mostly as rich as Croesus anyway. So frankly, you know, whether Rory McIlroy or Dustin Johnson win another £1 million is not the most, you know, appetising thing ever. But for Rob Milkins, this is a kind of life-changing thing. I mean, you know, it could be argued the 80,000 was plenty big enough. You know, the 150 grand could go to better places. I mean, who am I to be the judge of where it goes? But maybe we'll have that debate now, maybe we won't. But either way, let's just say personally for him, massive. You know, 150,000 for topping that Bet Victor series. As you say, he took it from Ali Carter tonight, plus 80,000. We know from the piece you wrote and other pieces about Rob how much he has struggled financially, one of his struggles, and how much of a concern that was even, what, a year ago and a bit more. So this is just huge, huge for him, isn't it, Phil? And seeing him with the family tonight, as I say, it's just emotional scenes. And you know, your heart goes out to him for the problems he's had, but now he's just having the most special night. And how long will the party go on tonight? Hours and hours, I think, deep into the Welsh night.
Well, I saw him on Eurosport, and he's got his family with him, and he's already turning on to the Players' Championship. So he was saying well, he said it won't be a massive one tonight. We'll see.
Of course, he got that. Yeah, no fair. Yeah. No, sorry,
but, but, I mean, I don't know. It might be hard to contain it, but he'll have a delayed party at some stage if it isn't tonight, I'm sure. And yeah, I think I agree on the bonus front that it sort of feels a bit gauche when there's the whole sort of talk about how players down the rankings are struggling a bit, quite a lot, and even not that far down the rankings necessarily. So the idea of just sort of someone who's earned loads and loads this season, earning loads more, is a bit hard to swallow for a lot of people. But when it's someone like Rob Milkins in this situation, I think it becomes a lot easier to swallow. You know, if Mark Allen had won it, nothing personal to Mark Allen, but he's won so much cash this season, that would have been less... it would have just gone down less well, wouldn't it? But yeah, I mean, we can have that chat now about that bonus. I think we've been brought up quite a lot on social media. So Peter Devlin made that very good point. Mark Williams was saying the same about maybe it should be spread out a bit more. But obviously, I think Betfic to put that bonus in because they sponsor all those 8 events and they want to do their best to attract all the top players to all of them. And that's their reason for it. So they wouldn't do that. You know, putting on another tournament wouldn't achieve that goal, but certainly if they had an extra tournament on top, they were sponsoring that as well. You know, that's a good thing as well. I was thinking about this and no idea what I was just musing about this to myself on a dog walk earlier. But if they had 150 grand to put in and do a tournament, which would be great for snooker and would do get good coverage and be seen as very positive, you could do a 150 grand tournament for the top 16 players, 21 and under or something like that. Call it the Beck-Vixter Next Gen Series or something. And it's just for the youngest players in the game. So that, I mean, that's the kind of thing people are talking about where just giving other people opportunities with the money that's floating around. But yeah, as I say, the fact that Milkins won it, I think people have less problems with it than if someone else had won it. So yeah, it's down to the sponsors in the end, isn't it? But definitely... I can see why people would want it to go elsewhere.
Well, I'll tell you who is hoping that he has a big night, and that's Tom Ford, who yeah. Will come to the tour. Of course, I've forgotten that they go straight to the Players' Championship. This is the beauty of this time of the season, Phil. We go from event to event. Yes, it feels a bit different for Milkins, it has to be said, but I personally never really liked this bonus that much, if I'm honest, but... most people seem to quite like it and quite like the sort of extra layer of sort of drama it produces. I think my issue has come through a little bit this week is that the Welsh Open is such a special tournament and there almost seems to be a bit more talk about this bonus at times than the Welsh Open. And I think, well, I know we've said it at times here, listen, we love the layers and, you know, as a big golf person, I can say that snooker's taken a lot of ideas from golf. Barry Herman have admitted that. He jokes, I think he may be with us when he's like, all my best ideas, I've stolen them. And, you know, we maybe can't quibble with the little bits we don't like when so many of the things haven't been successful, like the 32, the 16, the 8 event on ITV. I don't know if we haven't got enough layers without, you know, deciding which player is going to earn a massive amount of money on top rather than another. I don't know. It's not the most seemly element of the season for me, but listen, it's one of those where I'm probably not going to lose sleep over it. And, you know, we'll open the debate up to others, Phil, and see what they think. You know, talking snooker at yahoo.com, or indeed you can tweet us at talking snooker. Yeah, I was about 50-50, I've got to be honest. I think it was about 50-50 on people that said, no, it's really exciting. We like the extra layer. No problem with it at all if Betfix wants to do that. And, of course, that's true. But certain people definitely saying, no, I think, you know, Nick, you're not alone. It's something that doesn't particularly appeal well to me. Joe Perry was actually one of those that said that. And he said Peter Devlin came out earlier in the week. I don't know. There's just something about it. It's such a lot of money. But anyway, we'll maybe move on from there for now and just say, you know.
I think my last thing on that would be that, yeah, that idea I had and people saying, oh, you can put another tournament. Like, if there was something else to do with that money, then fair enough. But there might not be. And if it's that money in the bonus or nothing, I'd take the bonus. You know, I'd rather a Stuka player 150 grand than no one 150 grand, which is just coming from a bookmaker. I'd rather the Stuka player at it than a bookmaker at it. So if the option is the bonus or nothing, I'll have the bonus. But in my mind, if there was 150 grand to go to somewhere else in the game, that might be more appealing, but that might not even be an option. So
it's a fair point. And certainly people have intimated to me, you know, you have to be careful about talking about money not being in the game that's there currently, and it might not be there at all type thing. And I get that point. But it's certainly an interesting debating point. And I think it's it's something that's been on my mind for a while, and it's just sort of a bit of a came to a head this week. And I think it happened that it coincided with the Welsh, that it's so special. And it seemed to be such an obsession for people, and it's something I don't quite share, if I'm honest. But listen, what we can say is that was some story again. And we had a return of the close finals, Phil. We felt a bit short-changed. Yeah. We're getting a few in the back now, 9-7 tonight. I would have thought it would have done good business on television. That ended at a nice time, and lots of draw and win tonight. Always looked the likelier winner, Milkins, as the night went on. But, of course, so right to mention that break of, I think, 64 from Sean. I said this before, one of the many, many, many things I love about snooker is that sometimes I think a screenshot can say more than a video. And I think this was one of those examples. I put a screenshot up of the table when Sean started. And how he made that, I just don't know. I mean, bearing in mind, he also had unfortunate run of the balls about three or four times. He kept playing very aggressive shots and not getting the run and still pulling pots out. It was quite something. And, you know, it made me think, and I've said this for a while, and it strikes me a lot. I sometimes can't get over how aggressive players are. They're constantly on the front foot. They really are. There was no sign of Murphy sort of, you know, I'll play it cagey, you know, I'm falling a bit behind it. Just going for everything. Milkins as well. And Ronnie, I felt, said it this afternoon, Ronnie O'Sullivan on Eurosport. There's something so appealing about Milkins, isn't there? He sort of devil may care. He compared it to Drago, actually, at one time. And then said, actually, yeah, Drago was a kind of lot quicker and a lot madder, frankly. But it's that similar vibe at times where Milkins, he will chuck a bad shot in, Berger was saying. That's always in his locker, more than maybe the average player. But then he'll pull something out. He'll do it quickly. And you'll think, bloody hell, how do you do that? And Bonnie and Jimmy were saying, it's very hard to play against someone like that. They're so unpredictable. And sometimes you wonder why Milkins hasn't done more. But again, you know, the vagaries of form are so interesting. To me, he looks like a different person. I texted you this in the week, didn't I? He almost looks like a different person. He has got a real swagger about him at the moment. And a kind of like, I don't know, he just sort of dominates the table. He's got a sort of, I decide what happens on this table type vibe, is the way I put it, I think, on social media. And I love that about him at the moment. It's so good to see. And am I right in thinking this could put him in the top 16?
I think... the way people are talking about it, I don't know if it's guaranteed, but I think it looks that way, yeah.
So, that's massive if he gets straight to the crucible, isn't it? There's not that many more events to go. So he's obviously sniffing on the sort of dividing line. Yeah. So, I mean, we talk about, time and time again about that word trappings has come up a lot tonight. So many trappings from this, of course. The champion of champions. Would he be in the tour? Would be close enough, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Would be in that. Of course he would, with winning as much as this, yeah. So, you know, this is brilliant. You know, you wouldn't believe Milkins would be in the tour championship, would you, frankly? If someone said that, it's amazing, really. And we'll come to the players later and players championship and some of the players that are missing from that. And it's quite a story. But Phil, what a great week we saw, didn't we? It was just a brilliant tournament. I mean, we love the home nations. You always say, you know, the stories come, bam, 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 we never get bored. I mean, how do we start for highlights? I mean, maybe Ronnie O'Sullivan and his tip. That kept us going for about 4 or 5 days, didn't it?
Yeah, it was a lot of tip chat. Yeah, I mean, his first game, he got through it and nothing happened. He sort of breezed past Ollie Lyons, didn't he? But then it all sort of started kicking off against Ross Muir. Came off, literally kicking off, came off twice. He was really struggling. Just got over the line 4-3. There was that mad thing where he gave away the sixth frame because it was quite confusing because it wasn't. I thought he was snookered, or he said he thought he was snookered as well. And then it was pointed out to him that he could hit the red, and then he just had that mad lash at it. I'm sure everyone's seen it, but it was it was mad, really. I mean, I always enjoy seeing sort of crazy things that you remember, but it was a mad thing to do.
Well, not only say, that, but it was one of the whoppers of the season with him claiming he had no other shot. I mean, he had about 20 other shots.
Oh, yeah, he certainly had other shots.
Yeah, so many things.
I mean, or he could have just played that a lot better. Yeah. But I don't know, people think it's disrespectful to Ross, but I don't know. I'm sure if you're his opponent and you're saying, oh, he wants to give you away frames when you don't have to do anything, I'll take the disrespect and I'll take the frame, thank you very much. I imagine that's what they'd say. But he got through it. Then it came off again against Lawler, didn't he? Got through that. But yeah, there was a lot of tip chats, but it all came... It did really well, to be fair, to get to the quarterfinals with all that going on. But then it all sort of spectacularly fell apart from there. But yeah, going back early on, remembering early stories, Liam Davies winning, I thought was a remarkable thing. Because he just got back off the plane pretty much straight away from Australia, playing in the WSF events, which he hadn't managed to win. I think he'd gone deep in the junior and the full one, but hadn't got over the line. And he came back to play Nappon, which is a really hard game for anyone on tour, really, and to beat him 4-3. Amazing stuff. And I think he said afterwards it showed what the pressure was like when he just was coming in with a free hit here, not expected to win, whereas in Australia he was playing for a tour card and was expected to do well. The difference how he could play, but it was another amazing win for the 16-year-old.
No, definitely. And I haven't got extensive notes here, but the one note I did make was Dominic Dale beating Neil Robertson 4-0 in the last 64. Mm. And that is a mighty result and feeds into this continuing narrative that Neil's just not having a good season, frankly, by his standards. I've certainly seen some people say, let's not over-exaggerate that, and that's also fair. You know, he's got deep at a lot of events. We are comparing it by his very, very high standards. But he's certainly not quite at the races. Now, I've been away for the last week. I've been in Malta, Phil, and I was just saying to you that I watched a lot of German Eurosport coverage in my hotel, and I did notice, that thing that people say is you, and I'm not really a complaint, it's just an observation, but I was sort of with that main channel coverage, and you realise how much you saw of Ronnie and Selby. Those two, every night I was going back to see those two. I didn't notice that, but again, if you're broadcasting, you're going to show them, aren't you? They're marvellous players. So I saw an awful lot of those two. I mean, that Mark Selby seed dry here, I mean, that was... you needed a medal, if you say that, to watch the end of that. I think it was gone past 1 a.m., gone past 2 a.m. for me in Malta. So I didn't last the pace on that one, even though I am something of a night owl. Eventually, Mark won that 4-3. But then Milkins beat Selby, didn't he, 4-2 in the last 32. So that was an early sign of how well Milkins was playing. Of course, he went all the way to the title. Daniel Wells as well, beating Judd Trump 4-2 in the last 32. And a very gracious Judd. Now, he doesn't always get respect. Many people say, well, come on, Judd, give respect to your opponent. But he was really fulsome in his praise there. Not quite as kind as Ronnie O'Sullivan was about Daniel Wells, now I think about it. And those comments that may not have, certainly did not please and Daniel, and upset him, I think, somewhat. Ronnie saying that he didn't think he was quite up to it. But so all sorts of things were happening, aren't we? That's what we're saying. As usual in these home nations, all sorts of stories coming all the time.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I'll just go up there. I mean, I watched Judd beat Louis Heathcote in the previous round, and that was a great game. Really, Heathcote should have won. He looked brilliant, just didn't quite get over the line. And then Judd lost to Daniel, and that was an amazing game, really. Judd was looking pretty comfortable. He missed a really, really easy black where he was just sort of looking like he was clearing up to go 3-0. And then that was it. He lost that frame and lost 4-2. Ronnie said those things, and I'm sure everyone's read it, but I thought it was typical O'Sullivan in terms of it was like shocking at first to hear. It was like, whoa, why has he said that? And then when you sort of thought about it more, you could see where he's coming from, and it probably largely made sense, but it just sounded way worse than the way he put it sounded really bad. because I think he was sort of saying Wells is playing his best snooker at the minute, which I think Wells said himself. He's probably playing the best snooker of his career when he's as an amateur, and he gets to play in the pro events, and he proved that by beating Judd Trump and beating Matt Selt to get there as well. He's been playing a lot of Championship League stuff. And then, yeah, it just sounded really, really brutal from Ronnie, because Rachel said to him, well, he shouldn't... yeah, because Ronnie was saying, oh, maybe he should stay part-time and just play in some pro events, and that would be the way he'll enjoy it more, play his better stuff. But Rachel said, oh, but of course he wants to be a professional snooker, he's got a big ambition. And then Ronnie just brutally said, well, he's never going to be a tournament winner, he's not good enough, so what's the point of trying that effectively? Which, yeah, it was seemed really harsh, because he's a very good player, Daniel Wells. If you've beaten Judd Trump in a big ranking event, then you're an excellent player. So, yeah, that didn't go down very well with people. But I did sort of see this point that you can play, you play better with the pressure off, and as soon as you go professional and you're just playing to pay the bills, it's very, very difficult, whereas he's clearly playing better now without that pressure. So that bit made sense. But, yeah, to just outright say that you will, a player's never going to be good enough to win a tournament was unnecessarily harsh, I thought, from the Rocket, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, Daniel Wells did come out, didn't he, and say that, you know, he was upset by those comments, really. And, you know, he was saying that Ronnie's one of his heroes. I mean, actually, let me try and get some of those quotes up so we try and remind ourselves of those. Sullivan said he's never going to be a tournament winner. He's just not good enough. He should just stay as a part-time player. There's a lot of players on tour who can't mentally sustain it. I was advising him, I told him to stay as a part-time player. Well, Wells responded by saying it was quite upsetting to hear someone who's been one of my heroes saying those things about me. There's a lot of talk about mental health in sport, and comments like these are really tough to take for people. I'm quite strong as a person and I'll deal with it, but other people might not be as strong. I'm taking this from other people a little bit, but I tend to agree that the thing about Ronnie is it's a bit of a pinch of salt thing, isn't it? I mean, you know, I'm not saying in 2 weeks' time you'll say Daniel Wells is looks every each tournament winner, but he might do something like that. Do you know what I mean? You can't really exactly rely on... You can't always 100% guarantee... There are nuggets. There are pure nuggets from Ronnie. And when he's at his absolute level-headed best, there's an awful lot of wisdom from Ronnie. But sometimes you get the feeling it's a bit fly-by-night. He's sort of saying things to fill a bit of airspace, and next time he'll say something completely different. So yeah, that's not a defence at all. He probably shouldn't have said this, really, but in the way he said it, probably. But again, we know, you know, the old thing about, you know, not day to day, but sometimes it's sentence to sentence with one. He's so contradictory, isn't he? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Sort of fact, and he will also always claim, like, I didn't hear him claim this, but he'd probably just say afterwards, like, I was just trying to gee him up and encourage him to try harder and play better, which probably isn't true. But yeah, you never get the impression he's put a lot of thought, but you don't get the impression he's put any thought into the points he makes on punditry before he says them. So yeah, he could easily say something different afterwards. And also he could claim, like, I mean, it depends how he says it, you know, him saying that he should remain just playing some events, not put all his eggs in the pro basket because he's playing better. You know, that sounds very silly when Wells then just goes and beats Judd Trump. But then in a way, Ronnie will say, well, that proves his point because he's playing as an amateur now and he's playing his best snooker well enough to beat Judd Trump. But if he went pro, maybe he couldn't do it because he couldn't handle the pressure. So, yeah, as I say, with everything Ronnie says, not everything, but a lot of what Ronnie says, however bad it sounds, there is some sort of strange wisdom in there. But yeah, it was certainly put in a very bad way.
Yeah, I think we'd agree on that. And what we traditionally tend to do, isn't it, is take people through results-wise from the last 16. So let's do that then. Sean Murphy beat Daniel Wells 4-1. Well, you alluded to it earlier. I mean, listen to Sean Murphy on his own 147 pod with Phil Seymour saying that, you know, you just can't do better than that. And snooker players can't do better than that. 145 followed by 147 is just, it's mind-blowing, isn't it? The quality of that, to sustain that over two frames, is just absolutely breathtaking. A brilliant effort, and we just can't praise Sean enough for that, can we?
Yeah, and I think he made a really good clearance in the previous frame as well, so it was just perfection for a while. And Yeah, and Daniel Wells, I think he won the next frame, so he did well just not to be completely sort of knocked over by that. But yeah, I mean, yeah, that's your reward, isn't it, on tour? You know, you've had an amazing result beating Judd Trimble in the afternoon. You come back in the evening and get walloped like that by Sean Murphy. But yeah, it's as good as it. You can't play any better than that. It was amazing.
It was, and actually Phil made that point on his pod. You know, credit to Daniel for that, for coming back, because some guys were just pole-axed, but, you know, he came back. That's the credit. That's it says so much about the mentality of all these guys on tour, really. Well, Joe O'Connor had a thumping win. He beat Robbie Williams 4-0. Won Sijun, beat Jack Lazowski 4-1. It was Pang Jung Soo 4, Jack Jones 2. Bonnie O'Sullivan's beat Ben Mersens 4-0. Mark Allen saw off Luca Purcell 4-2. Rob Milkins beat Hossein Vafai 4-1. And Tien Peng Fei beat John Higgins 4-1. Move on to the last eight, and it was Sean Murphy 5, 1 Sijun 0. Then what a result, Phil. Another whitewash for O'Sullivan this season. We know about the issues he had with his tip and generally quite erratic kind of week generally from Ronnie, I think it's fair to say. But nevertheless, you don't expect him to be beaten as he was 5-0 by Tien Peng Fei. And breaks of 66, 51, 82 and 73 from Tien. So he certainly did play well. Rob Milkins beat Mark Allen 5-1. Hell of a win there for Milkins. Allen, not really at the races with his own performance, but still excellent from Milkins. And then a real kind of late night one again. I watched the end of this one. Pang Jung Soo 5, Joe O'Connor 4. Yeah. O'Connor came back from 4-2 to 4-4 in that. Pang winning it. Really good 1-2-4 when they decided to win it. So lots for you to reflect on there, Phil, and those two stages. But yeah, Ronnie, what was the other one? Was it Ding, wasn't it?
Ding at the UK, yeah, lost 6-0. Oh. And yeah, mad. I mean, yeah, he wasn't sort of zoned in, which was strange. He wasn't like completely reckless. He wasn't not trying at all. But by the quarterfinals, sometimes he's really sort of thrashing around in the first round or two of these Home Nations. But by the quarterfinals, I really didn't expect him to have any problems there at all. And he did. And Tian played very well, to be fair. As you say, he made a load of half centuries and looked really solid. Yeah, it was a very, very odd one. And I watched all of that O'Connor Pang match on the Friday night as well. I was really invested in Pang. I'm sure people would have noticed that I did that sort of wild suggestion that he was going to win this because he'd got to the quarterfinals of the German Masters and that was his first ranking quarterfinal, much like Jordan Brown and Fang Zhengyi did. So I thought it was written in the stars. And I had a couple of quid on him at 125-1. So I was getting quite excited when he got to the semis. And he's just a really good player. Like, that wasn't completely random. Been very impressed with him. He's sort of a bit sort of Yang Bing Tao-like in that he's a young player that powers in a lot of long pots, but he's very sensible and happy to sort of get involved in the safety and tactical side of it. Doesn't take any silly things on. I think he runs out of position sometimes. He won't have a go at a difficult one. He'll just play safe, which is, he's very disciplined. But yeah, that game was a slog, let's say. But he won it late night, set up the semi-final with Murphy. And yeah, like you said, with Milkins as well. I mean, what a tricky run that is. First couple of rounds, so he had Dean Young in his first round in Wales, but then Selby and then Vafai and then Allen. Just to get to the semis, yeah, take some doing.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're on good form, actually, now I think about it, because I think you're underselling yourself. That point you made early, you know, I think a few of us were like, bloody hell, he might be right here. He kept going through it round by round, didn't he, Pang Jung Soo? And yes, I think you had a nice turn of phrase about that Friday night match, saying you've had better Fridays. Anyway, we've all had days like that watching, and nights like that watching snooker. There seem to be a lot of quite long matches in this. The ones that sort of like you're suddenly realizing, oh, wait a minute, it's like 10 o'clock and it's like, you know, 2-1 or 3-2. Like,
it seemed to be sort of all or nothing. There was like a lot of them and then a lot of whitewashers. There didn't seem to be much in the middle.
No, true. There was a fair few the other way as well. Well, semi finals were relatively comfortable for the winners. Robert Milkins beating Tien Peng Fei 6-2. Sean Murphy beating Pang Jung Soo 6-3. And I think the experience told in both those, didn't it, really? They were half-decent affairs, and the the losing players certainly had their moments in those matches and their chances. But I think in the end, we got the final most of us were expecting. And it gave us, you know, this very exciting day with Milkins, the champion, winning 9-7. And we must give credit to Tian Pengfei and Pang Jiangxi for getting that far, of course.
Mm.
And say that, you know, that was a really valiant effort. But in the end, it was, it was the two Englishmen that got through, wasn't it, Phil? And gave us, a really smashing climax. One of those where most people, you know, as I say, would have made Murphy favourite. But there was no absolute, you needed convincing, didn't you? You certainly thought the way Milkins was playing and, you know, the monkey off his back of winning that in Gibraltar, you were certainly not counting Milkins out by any stretch.
No, not at all. I'd be surprised if anyone thought like that. Yeah, definitely right to say Pang and Tian both got their first ever semi-finals. So amazing runs. And yeah, they played well. Well, played all right anyway. You know, Yuan Zhejiang got to the quarters, and really sort of crumbled against Murphy. But I wouldn't say that Tian played all right against Milkins, just lost. And Pang really made it really scrappy. And yeah, it was 6-3, but it felt very close throughout that match. So they were good. But yeah, the final, yeah, definitely. You wouldn't have been, because as I say, he's beaten some great players. Selby for fine, Allen back to back. And as you said before, coming into this, you know, semi in Germany, this wasn't out of the blue. And with the trophy last season as well. So there was plenty of reasons to be hopeful if you were a Milkins fan. And definitely Murphy was the favourite. But yeah, close. It seemed like it'd be close. And it was throughout, really. And as we said before, he just a brilliant way to get over the line in the end. So yeah, an amazing week, really. I'm sure we've missed all sorts in that little summary, but I felt like an awful lot happened.
It did. And just thinking about it now, we said, Murphy hit sort of snooker perfection against Daniel Wells. And actually, a couple of pun, I think that Ken Doherty and Darren Morgan might have both said it. He never really looked quite the same. Mind you, he had a thumping win against Wells, it's in mind. But he never really, I mean, of course, they never really got to a 145, 147 standard. Of course he didn't. But he never really looked quite that convincing. Again, you're right. At times he looked a bit patchy in that semi-final. He sort of struggled to get any real fluency. And again today. So one of those where, you know, classic tournament where you peak a little bit too early. But it's great to see his form back. He's looking like, you know, talk about the demeanour that Milkins has. But Murphy's got that old demeanour back again. He's looking like, you know, he's got that real confidence back, and he's such a, you know, a glorious player when he's playing confidently. So we've got lots to look forward to for him, I'm sure, even in the events to come. And maybe you'll find it's another crucible one. It's only 2 years, of course, since he had that, you know, famous run all the way to the final, Phil. So, you know, lots to reflect on, and a really special week. We've got the Players' Championship coming right up. But maybe first we'll have a little bit of correspondence on what we've just seen in Wales. You've got... I'll give you snooker knowledge, Phil. Now I'm going for a quick walk around the block. I've got to get a couple of things. I'll be back soon, mate.
Yeah, this was a great email from snooker knowledge. Hi, guys. Fantastic show, as per usual. I love the weekly chats about the brilliant game. I've been very fortunate to spend all day Monday, Thursday and Friday at the Welsh Open in London now, and we'll be back for the final on Sunday. I'm writing this ahead of the final. A brilliant location in the heart of a wonderful seaside resort. I drove and stayed in a hotel up the road with a lot of the players. The format allows for you to see all the players, and close proximity between the venue and hotel means you really do feel like you are living in a snooker world. There is no sport like it. I spoke to so many players and pundits, and as per usual, they all had plenty of time for fans and to anoraks like myself who want to talk about the wonderful game. As for the venue itself, the facilities are clean and toilets are easily accessible. The bar area is huge with hot food and drink available, but I was able to nip in and out of the venue during the day to have food in the town. My only issue was with the seating plan. As with all Home Nations events, seating is unreserved up to the weekend. I do feel that dependent on ticket sales, they should reserve seats, especially for the final Friday quarterfinals. Ticket sales were fantastic and they easily could have had reserve seating for the quarterfinals. But in the end, I did manage to get a seat close to the action for what turned out to the best quarterfinal between Peng and O'Connor. Llandudno is a wonderful location and I do hope becomes a regular home for the Welsh Open. The whole town knew the snooker was in town and the buzz was special. I am biased as I grew up not far from this wonderful little town. Llandudno will always hold a special place in my heart, and it's been great to see old friends enjoy the week as well as tomorrow's final. I've been to tournaments all over the country, and nothing come close to Sheffield, but Llandudno really was special, and you felt like the town was proud to be hosting the tournament, and the locals loved it. If you're ever up in Llandudno, give me a shout, and I'll happy give you guys a tour, and we'll love to chat about the game. Keep up the fantastic work, Nige. Well, that was a great email. Very much thanks to you, Nige. And glad you had a great time. And yeah, that all comes across really when you're watching the tournaments there. Everyone, all the players, anyone on the punditry team or anything always says how great it is. And most important, well, not, I don't know if it's most importantly, but very importantly, yeah, the ticket sales look great from the start. And that is often not the case at a Home Nations event. They always build up and they're always good by the weekend. But Monday, Tuesday, not always the best, but they look brilliant throughout there. So yeah, it's clearly, they've clearly struck gold in for a snooker venue in Llandudno.
Yeah, and it's sort of maybe not surprising, but it really does make a difference even on telly, doesn't it, when it's full early
Definitely,
on?
Definitely, yeah.
It makes it look and feel more special and more significant. It just makes it, you know, it just it's great. And it's been like that from the very word go in Llandudno. I can't remember which one tournament they would have first held there. Of course, it did hold the tour, didn't it? Now it's moving. Whichever one it first held when they first came on the circuit, it was like from the word go, it was good. From the word go, day one, that's busy. I always thought Coventry was like that, actually, a bit of a tangent. I was always very disappointed when that tournament left, the Champions left there. I always thought that did well from day one. It's certain venues just have it, be it catchment area, be it advertising, a whole load of variables, I'm sure. I mean, it has got a great catchment area. I didn't know, actually, in many ways. The whole, you know, North Wales. I mean, Liverpool's not too far away. Various cities of the north. I know people.
It's not that far from me, really. Yeah, a couple of hours from Sheffield, maybe a bit longer. So, yeah, it's close to a lot of places.
No, it is. It definitely is. And, yeah, no, that was a smashing and a bit flippant. It wasn't that long at all, was it, Nigel? And it gave me a chance to eat, Phil, still the world's best chocolate bar.
Double-decker.
Old school, but some... Still wonderful. No chocolate bar has ever done sort of nougat, biscuit and chocolate in one place like this one. Let's move on. Two smaller pieces of correspondence. Darren McGowan on Twitter. Have to say, I do like the upbeat Dominic Dale and the downbeat Darren Morgan in the BBC Wales studio. And Snooker Man on Twitter, really enjoyable tournament. Rob Milkins is so exciting to watch when he's playing at his best. Yeah, couldn't agree more with that. Yeah, I didn't see much of BBC Wales, so you can, if you saw bits, you can say, I know you may well have watched more on Eurosport yourself. I mean, I always like seeing Dominic. I always think he's just such great value. I did see that Ronnie being a bit rude about his hair. That's quite amusing. What have you done with your barnet? Classic Ronnie, wasn't it?
It was funny.
Oh, but I must play though, Virgo. Brilliant. He kicked off tonight. Just got back tonight from Malta. Kicked off with a Tales of the Unexpected reference. Brilliant. One for the teenagers. First sentence. And I'm told the library that he referenced the golden shot about a couple of days ago. I mean, that is before everyone's time. I'm surprised it's not before John. I mean, the golden shot was on television about a million years ago. Bob Monkhouse on a Sunday afternoon, I think it was ATV, an ATV programme. And the great thing about it was, I mean, health and safety, I mean, would have a field day. I think they used to have, like, actual bows and arrows, and just, it was just the most dangerous, ridiculous television programme. I'd love to know which, I can't go back to look at every broadcast to find out how he referenced it and why, but he did. But yeah, Virgo was on top form, though, from what I heard. So that was great to hear. And of course, Eurosport. Usual brilliance. I had the pictures of Rachel, Neil and Jimmy and everyone else. And then I think it was Rolf Kai would come straight over and talk over them in German. So it was a nice sort of interesting, different sort of vantage point of seeing the way, you know, the way that German viewers would see the action. But it looked like, you know, both broadcasters did it admirably throughout the week.
Yeah, definitely. I always sort of... just naturally put Eurosport on, and I did flick on BBC a couple of times, but I had Eurosport on for most of it. But yeah, I didn't watch that Ronnie bit, which was funny. And yeah, Darren Morgan, that's the only time you really see him on TV. So yeah, it's interesting to have different people. The two people who, and I've forgotten the name and I should really have checked, but there's a man and a woman who host the BBC Wales stuff and they're both really good. So yeah, no, it's nice to have the options, isn't it, to flick between. But yeah, I always tend to just out of just habit, really, Eurosport, even on the big ones, I always find myself flicking on Eurosport and go and just reminding myself, oh, I could put on BBC, but just because I've got it on all the bloody time, so I just do it. But yeah, nice to have a bit of difference. And it was nice, you know, Dominic having that, you know, one of the best results he's probably had for years, really, whitewashing Neil Robertson. So nice for him in his home event when he could really dig in and be on the coverage and talk about it as much as he could possibly do. So that was great for him.
Definitely. Ian Hunt was on duty tonight, so I presume it was him that was doing that. Someone that does a lot of, I've known to do quite a lot of radio. He presents a lot of the big sort of Wales football matches, football nights and what have you on the radio. But yeah, he's sort of the main man for that. And yeah, it's sort of, you know, it's interesting because it's not a network TV event. So I saw someone else make this point, actually, that it's never sort of listed as a BBC event, but I mean, to all intents and purposes, it sort of is. I mean, you know, you can, you know, I mean, Hackney, I watch it tonight, no problem. We just flick on a button. Mm. I mean, I know that, you know, we mustn't be, you know, we must remember that some people are very old fashioned with them watching the telly and red button, and, you know, computers aren't as easy to find for everybody. But generally speaking, you know, it is available across the UK. And it was interesting, you know, I always think, as you sort of said before, when there's two different broadcasters, it offers something a bit sort of interesting and different. So, yeah, well, I think we thoroughly enjoyed it, didn't we, Phil?
I definitely think when it's on the BBC as well, even if it's just on BBC Wales, it's really beneficial to the way the BBC cover it on their website as well. There were quite a few stories popping up on the main homepage when you flick the BBC homepage on, sport homepage, with snooker on there. Stories from Ali Carter and the Daniel Wells story and stuff, which I don't think would have got on there if it hadn't been covered by the BBC. So, and you know, we know the numbers those stories get read when on a BBC website. So yeah, that's all great stuff as well.
It is, and we should say hats off to Shabnam, shouldn't we, for continuing success of the Framed podcast, including Ali Carter recently talking about how so many of the tour players are really struggling. So that was there's a great reach from the BBC and they have great advantages, but nevertheless, you know, congratulations, because I'm sure without Shadman doing it, well, there wouldn't be that kind of access all the time. So great credit to her for that. And it's a really good listen every week. Now we should maybe move on to the Players' Championship, Phil. We don't want to do a marathon, do we? That's the mantra. So we're going to see a brilliant event. This is underway now tomorrow, not that many hours away, Monday in the UK, in Wolverhampton. And well, these are the matches we can look forward to. They were only decided, weren't they, literally tonight. We didn't know the lineup, which is not brilliant. I think a lot of people aren't too happy about that. But again, there are only so many weeks of the season and there's so many great events to fit in. So that, you know, there were that these things will sometimes happen, but it definitely feels like they suffered a little bit because they can't publicise individual matches where they are and, you know, promoting on television and what have you. But anyway, these are the matches that we now do know. It's Mark Hallam v Joe O'Connor, Luca Purcell against Jack Lazowski, Ali Carter against Judd Trump, Robert Milkins against Tom Ford, Kyron Wilson has got Zhao Yulong, it's Ding Junhui v Gary Wilson, Mark Selby against Sean Murphy, and Ryan Day against Chris Wakelin. Well, Selby Murphy was a recent world final, wasn't it? And then they met very soon after in that very short event in Leicester, didn't they? British Open. So that's one that really sort of leaps out. But lots of good matches there. I mean, Purcell Lazowski will be a cracking watch. Ali Carter will give Judd Trump a run for his money, I would have thought, in that match. And yeah, go through those. Dean Junhui, Gary Wilson catches the eye as well. Loads to look forward to. We do have one message here, Phil, from Neil Caesar, who says the Players' Championship is a disaster this year. ITV must be crestfallen. And then it says, I'll watch, of course. Keep up the good work, legends. How nice. Thank you, Neil. That's kind of you. I think you said it all, though, there, Neil, really, that you'll be watching. And listen, yeah, I've long banged the drum for saying, and this is the logical position to take, that no player is bigger than the sport. Now, Vonnie O'Sullivan might be the closest one to bucking that trend ever, but even he's not bigger than the snooker. No way. Nor's Mark Williams, nor's John Higgins, or anybody. So, yes, we might see a little bit of suffering with the viewing figures on a couple of nights when Ronnie may have been playing. But otherwise, there's loads of crackers here. So I'm not, you know, it's a shame some of those big stars aren't there. Neil Robertson, of course, another one. But there are many wonderful players that are there, Phil. So, you know, we might lament it for a day or two. Oh, what a shame we're not going to see, you know, Ronnie, Neil, you know, John, Mark. But when we get into these crackers, we won't forget them, but we'll soon be enjoying what is on offer, eh?
Yeah, definitely. I guess it's just because this is a 16-person tournament, so you expect those guys. But, you know, if you saw most of these ties come up in another tournament, you'd be like, oh, great, that's one to watch. You know, Brussel against Sosowski, brilliant. So, yeah, this is still going to be an excellent tournament. And all the people listening to this podcast will be watching it because we're the kind of people who watch everything. But, yeah, I guess there's the casual snooker fans might be less likely to flick it on if they don't have the most recognisable names, but we'll see, maybe not. It'll be an interesting test of the viewing figures on there because these ones always do really well, don't they, on ITV4. So we'll see how they do with this. But still, yeah, a brilliant tournament to look forward to. It's funny when you see these ones because it's on the one-year list and then there's some players on there and you think, how are they on there? But because the season feels a long time ago, some of those wins, isn't it? I mean, Kyron won that one right at the start of the year.
Yeah.
He's not had a great time of it since at all. And you almost sort of forget why Joe Yulong's on that and stuff. But they're all done it deservedly. It's just a few months ago. But yeah, plenty to look forward to. And yeah, Milkins coming straight off the big win against Tom Ford. And that'd be entertaining.
I think maybe partly because I was in Iceland, but for that final, I also keep forgetting that Kyron won that tournament. Yeah. I think it stuck out a bit, wasn't it? It was in August, wasn't it? And it was like, I don't know why. It wasn't a great final, was it? But yeah, I keep thinking, oh, Kyron's not done much. Well, he actually has won a tournament, so he has done much. You know, winning a tournament this season is very, very good. So yes, you're right. And yeah, there's some guys there maybe you weren't expected to be there, you know, but that all adds to the gaiety of it. And yeah, there should be some cracking matches to look forward to if you're in the UK live on ITV4. And what do we say, Phil, if you're elsewhere?
Check World Snooker Tour websites.
That will do all the work. We don't want to, do we? There's nothing complications. So have a look on the site. They'll let you know. Cracking tournament to look forward to. Do enjoy it over the next week. We'll be along to review it afterwards, of course. Anything more to say about the players, sir, or should we move on to the next?
Don't think so. It's all good.
All good. We're looking forward to it, aren't we? Well, we must say congratulations to China's Heilong Ma, who beat Stan Moody 5-0 to win the WSF Championship in Sydney. Now, Stan Moody had already won the junior title, hadn't he? So he'd already guaranteed himself a tour card. And indeed, Ma was guaranteed that because he was playing Moody, but nevertheless got through. And it's a great effort. And got some quotes here. I was very excited to play in this final, even though I was already guaranteed the World Snooker Tour card. I was always in the back of my mind, and I wanted to take one ball at a time and to get the win. I know that in the history of this event, players from China have been very successful. And as a young player, I did not want to let China down, not only for myself, but for the other young players in our country. Yeah, I suppose, without wanting to delve into the obvious things, it's probably a time when China needs some good news stories type thing. And this is clearly one. I know it's a bit of conjecture about whether Stan Moody should have played in this event, having already got the tour card. There's views for and against that. And I think, you know, I'm probably one that can see both sides of that, really. A bit of a fence sitter on that one. But yeah, congratulations. And that was a thumping win in the final.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. I knew nothing about him, to be honest, beforehand. And I don't know much more about him since then. Apart from he's clearly very good. He's 19, great young talent. So, yeah, looking forward to seeing him play on tour. And, yeah, I was the same with you on that argument. You know, that really got a bit sort of tasty with the ones I saw online. People really vociferously on one side or t'other. And I found that quite strange because I thought it was quite clearly like there's points on both sides. And whichever way you land on, like I think he should have been allowed to play as just, you know, he's gone all the way to Australia. He's still an amateur. You know, it'd be crazy to kick off one of the brightest young talents in the game, so he can't play in this tournament. So I'm glad he did get allowed to play. But at the same time, I can see that it's not ideal at all. Because, you know, he's, as we were saying about Liam Davis earlier, saying about the pressure being very, very different for him. But yeah, as much as it would have, it's not ideal that he was playing, I think it would have been even less ideal to kick him out. But yeah, as I say, I was just surprised that people were so clear on any side of that, because I thought it was quite obvious of what was going on both sides of that. But yeah, congratulations, Hai Long Ma. I don't know if you've seen a picture of him. He looks so much like Tet Chaya. They're not even from the same country or anything. But yeah, he's a bit of a mini-me, just like Stan's a mini-me for Sean Murphy. So yeah, it's good that they've come through. And yeah, actually, Hai Long Ma beat Gao Yang, who'd been on the tour in the semis. So he was one of the favourites to win that event as well. So yeah, congratulations to those two. And hopefully we'll see those other guys, Liam Davies, Liam Pullen, Yulin Boyko. I'm sure they'll be back. I hope to see them too in the future.
Yep, indeed, Phil. And yeah, they joke about Sean Murphy being the father, don't they, of how much they look alike. But yes, no, cracking win there in the WSF there for Hai Long Ma. Many congratulations. Well, you are listening here to Talking Snooker with Phil Haig and Nick Metcalf. And we are reflecting primarily in this episode on a brilliant victory for Robert Wilkins. Congratulations to him. The Milkman, as they call him. Not a great one for snooker nicknames, but I quite like that one, the Milkman. And he has won the Welsh Open, a second ranking event. We probably thought he would never win any, Phil, the way he was looking. And now he has two. And as Ken Doherty said tonight, isn't that what sport's all about? And said that, you know, they say the good guys don't win, but this is proof that sometimes the good guys really do win. Well, I think we want to any other business, but there's plenty of it. And I would like to start with a sad line, actually, that the news has come through today that Dickie Davis has died. Now, for many of us, Dickie Davis was frankly the face and voice of so much of our sporting youth, our sporting lives. He was the main face and voice of ITV's World of Sport for two decades. I was saying tonight that, you know, at one time he was called Richard Davis. If you look at old World of Sport schedules, but Jimmy Hill, the late Jimmy, said, you know, you should change your name to Dickie. It will make a difference. You'll be more approachable. There's a bit more, I don't know, there's a bit more pizzazz about the name. The way Jimmy put it, it'll make a difference. And he became Dickie Davis. And Dickie always said that the change was phenomenal. That name change was so massive. And he was just an unflappable broadcaster, a very charismatic broadcaster. And of course, Phil, not in the general sporting sense, is very significant for this podcast and anyone that talks snooker, because Dickie Davis was the main face of so many snooker events. If you watched ITV when I was growing up in the 80s, in that golden period, it would have been Dickie presenting the action on ITV. There's a great picture that I think I might put it in an article that I wrote about him when I did my Voice of the Sports series from the Dern Gate in Northampton. Might have been the doubles, actually. The most brown picture of all time. Dickie in a totally brown suit, brown studio, brown tape, just marvellous. You have to try and look it up if you can. It's pure unadulterated 80s. But he was a marvellous broadcaster. One thing to say about our back catalogue, Phil, we had Hazel Irving on last autumn. I don't know if you remember, I was determined to ask about her working on the 88 Olympics with Dickie Davis. And she gave a lovely, fulsome tribute to how lovely he was on the air, how supportive he was towards her, and just what a brilliant, you know, brilliant man he was, frankly. So we're going to listen to Hazel talking about Dickie Davis. That's from our episode in September. But sad news. And I think we always remember, don't we, Phil, those people that bring snooker to us on television, same when we lost David Vine, and just whoever it is, you know, the faces that say hello and goodbye to us for those broadcasts, we see them so often. They're saying part of the family's a bit over corny, but they're just there in the corner of the room and it feels like they're just companions in our lives, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what Hazel has become for so many people. And yeah, that's what I was thinking when I heard that news, you know, what she was saying about him and how influential he was on her career and life in general, really. And yeah, she had such nice things to say about him. And so, yeah, even he provided a lot to the snooker world himself. And then much through her as well, really sort of helping on her career as well. So yeah, really sad news, and yeah, thoughts and with his family and everything.
No, very much so. Now, another person that we sadly did lose not so long ago was Doug Mountjoy. There's a really nice programme, isn't there, which I know we both watched, from BBC Wales. Now, this Legends of Welsh Sports series they're doing is brilliant. I've not seen all of them. I must catch up on the Neville Southall one. But, what, you know, if you're not, I'm sure many of you are all-round sports lovers like we are. They're all brilliant, the ones I've seen. And this is another example of that, the Doug Mountjoy programme. And there's so many great snooker people on there: Hendry, Davis, Jimmy White, Mark Williams, and lots of members of Doug's family. And one thing I really liked, of course, talking about yesteryear, I think it was Doug's daughter saying, "Oh, we got so excited. We used to watch the matches on CFAX." And of course, that was, which we all sort of hammer as a big joke, but it wasn't, it's not really, all it was just like a computer that's on the telly, really. It's not that different than following live scores now, but it's just a very different era. But a lovely show, wasn't it? And some very good footage from the old amateur championship that I really like seeing, that I've not seen before. And generally, Phil, what a lovely piece of nostalgia.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah, I watched it this morning. And amazing stuff, you know, about him going down the mines. And yeah, he went off to South Africa to win that tournament, which I noticed it was sponsored by Hague Whiskey, which I was delighted to see. And yeah, just, everyone says just, they describe in such a nice way. So it sounds, I've never met Doug, but sounds like a great guy, just sort of quiet, unassuming, just really nice bloke who loved snooker and looked great. I always think, you know, the frilly shirt's famous, but the way he wore his, though, sort of that wide waistcoat, and I don't know, in his pomp, he really looked like a sort of film star. He was a good looking guy. So he just had a great look about him. And yeah, amazing player. And yeah, that's well worth digging out and watching. Very enjoyable.
Indeed, you can see that programme on the iPlayer in the UK, but it has been put on YouTube, I think, now by one or two fans, actually. So if you look it up on YouTube, you will be able to see that programme there for our international audience. Talking about our international audience, Phil, we must say thanks to the good people at snookerpro.de, particularly to Lula there, for writing a really lovely review of the podcast in a special feature about all the main snooker podcasts out there. There are lots of terrific ones. We really are honoured. Such a good morale boost for us to know people are out there enjoying the pod so much. And a nice picture of us outside the Crucible. Well, I say it's nice. I hope we didn't put people off their cornflakes. They were looking at the piece over that. But yeah, me and you, with my very small beard and your enormous one.
Yeah. I think that's a nice enough picture, isn't it? But it's the only one we've got us to, so you've got to stick with it. But yeah, no, thank you very much for that, Lulu. That was very, very nice of you to do. And yeah, great that we've got so many listening options now. There's a whole string of podcasts that snooker fans can listen to. And content in general, I think there's the whole sort of sport is up in its game, and that's Stephen Hendry stuff. No. It's brilliant. I got round to watching the one with Steve Davis that he filmed at the Masters. And if anyone's not seen that, it's really brilliant, really funny. Davis cracks me up. And then there's other ones. I noticed Luca Purcell's started filming stuff on YouTube, which is very different, but really good. Obviously, Holt and stuff forgot his coaching stuff. So there is lots going on now, which I remember we had the youth special on here, and we were sort of encouraging, hoping for more and more content to spring up from all around the snooker community. So, yeah, it's all good stuff.
Indeed it is, Phil. Now, we should say, shouldn't we, that we are going to be joined by Luke G. Williams next week, and we really can't wait for that, because this is something that we've been trailing for a while. Luke has written a book about Patsy Houlihan, who is one of probably snooker's forgotten characters in many ways, and Luke doesn't want that to be the case. He wants Patsy to be talked about more and thought about more. And I know he's written a really excellent book, and we can't wait, can we, to sort of delve more into it with Luke and have a good discussion about that, and no doubt talk about some of Luke's other really, really good work as well. So that's something to really look forward to. Pat Houlihan, not somebody that I know as much about as I feel I should. I'm already enjoying delving into Luke's book, and next Monday he'll join us, and we're really looking forward to it, aren't we?
Yeah, well, he's almost sort of this mysterious character that no one's ever seen play, and that's the whole point of the book, isn't it? It's the best snooker player you've never seen. And yeah, Luke's sent us over a copy. So yeah, I'm midway through it and really enjoying it, and I'll have finished it off by the time we speak to him on Monday. And yeah, that's going to be great. I know a lot of people are excited about that in this new community. He's sort of a legendary figure, but as I say, almost like a mythical figure. So it's very intriguing. But yeah, looking forward to that one.
Indeed. And after that, Phil, we've been teasing, haven't we, that we are going to be joined by one of the UK's biggest television and radio personalities. We've been saying this for a while now on Twitter and the like. And it is a man, we can say, that's presented some of the most famous programmes in the history of television. And we're not over-dramatising that. We include Match of the Day and Countdown in that. And not only that, he currently has his own very popular nightly show on national radio. And of course, relevant for us here, he was one of the main faces of television snooker when he so brilliantly presented coverage of the sport on Eurosport. I know many of you, if not all of you, will have guessed by now that we are going to have Colin Murray with us here on Talking Snooker very soon. Now, we're going to be doing a lot of listening, aren't we, Phil? Because he's a very entertaining guy, Colin. I know him a bit from his excellent columns he writes for Metro, the newspaper that I work for, and indeed you work for, and we cannot wait to have Colin here. He's going to be a good old laugh, isn't he?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, looking forward to it. I don't know him at all, so looking forward to get to know him there. I've obviously been a fan of his work. Yeah, I thought he was great on the snooker. It was a shame he left. But Rachel's doing a great job since he's gone. But yeah, he's gone on to huge things. You know, hosting Countdown is massive. One of the most famous guys in the country, really, when you're doing stuff like that. So what a coup we've got on here. And thanks to you for sorting that out.
Well, can you? I can't believe we're going to have the presenter of Countdown on Talking Snooker. I mean, if you trace the long lineage back, that goes back to Richard Whiteley, twice nightly Whiteley. I mean, it's incredible. To think about it, you'll know why he is twice nightly, won't you? Because you're in that patch.
Oh, because he was on the news as well up here.
He was on Calendar, exactly. I think it was Terry Wogan that gave him that mono. I could be wrong by that, but I think it was.
You put me on the spot there. That was a bit before my time. I pulled that out from somewhere.
I don't think he was. I think he was doing that quite into the 90s. I was at York Uni in the 90s, and I think he was still on the Calendar then. So you
maybe I can. I was more of a Harry Gratian guy, I've got to say.
Yeah, God, yes, another fine broadcaster we lost not so long ago.
Yeah, yeah. I'm very sad.
I used to enjoy Calendar when I was at York Uni. But Krista Ackroyd, someone else that comes to mind on that, and the late Mike Morris on there as well. Lots of famous names from yesteryear. So we can't wait to have Colin Murray on here. He really is an entertaining character. So if you've got anything to ask Colin Murray, do contact us. TalkingSnooker@yahoo.com. Or tweet us at Talking Snooker, TalkingSnooker@yahoo.com, or tweet us at Talking Snooker. And also, last call for any questions or points you want to make about Patsy Houlihan. I know quite a lot of you have written in saying how pleased you are to know that Luke's coming on and will talk to us a lot more, give us some teasers about his book, about this great snooker character. But if you've got any stories yourself, please do pass them on. TalkingSnooker@yahoo.com or tweet or on Twitter. On our page there, Talking Snooker. That's it, I think, Phil. We've reached the end. The main story is, of course, Rob Milkins. What a brilliant snooker tale. How does this sport keep throwing up these stories? I mean, we know the Welsh is a special tournament. We said that many times, but what helps is how many stories they throw us every year. You know, the last three have been, just gets better and better and better, doesn't it? And you know, I think all of us were so, so pleased with Rob, just seeing the messages I'm getting in tonight from my Twitter and looking at the various forums. People are just delighted.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it's a wonderful story. It just seems like a universally popular character in snooker. Certainly every dealing I've had with him has been absolutely excellent. So yeah, thrilled for him. And I was thinking, as we're getting towards, I was thinking that this season seems as unpredictable as any, even though last season we said was the most unpredictable season. And last season we got to the World Championship and said, this is the most open World Championship ever. And I think we say that quite often. And I remember mentioning it to Mark Williams at the press day before the World Championship. And he said, well, it's not, is it? It's going to be one of the ones that always wins it. And he was right. It was Ronnie O'Sullivan. So I vowed not to get to this World Championship and say, oh, does it seem like the most open World Championship ever? But it does look like it's going that way. So we'll see if I can stick to my vow or not. But yeah, it's been a wild season.
It has. Just flick through my old diary here, Phil. 8 weeks to go until the greatest show in this sport. Can you believe it? The World Championship 8 weeks away. And what's great about it is how much we got between now and then. The players coming up now. We've got that WST Classic, of course, the event that replaced Turkey. The Tour Championship. All the world qualifiers. You know, our cup really will run us over. And we were going to have lots of special guests as well. Big voices to come between now and Sheffield. Starting off with Luke G. Williams and Colin Murray. So I think it's time for me to salute you and say I'll see you next week when we talk about Patsy Houlihan. Can't wait.
Absolutely, yeah. Pleasure as always. Thanks everyone for listening and enjoy the Players' Championship this week.
Indeed. Special event to come live on ITV4 in the UK. Check WST for your viewing options elsewhere. And yes, enjoy the tournament. This is a really special time of the season, isn't it? We'll be back with Luke G. Williams next Monday. We look forward to your company then. And Colin Murray coming soon. So keep your questions coming in for both Luke and Colin. But for now, with congratulations to Rob Milkins for a famous victory in Wales. From Phil and myself, cheerio.
Sports Social Podcast Network.